June 20th, 1994. This is Ruth Henderson interviewing Herman Haig, Sr. of Havertagrace.
I met Eddie here.
How did you end up in Hoffa County?
Well, I was in high school. I was in high school in Simmons, Montgomery, West Virginia. It's called Simmons High School. And I was born and raised in a little coal field called Powelson, West Virginia. And it was 9 miles from the town, school where the school was located. And if you was a senior and had passing grade in 1942, right after war broke out, you could just take the civil service exam and the government would send you wherever they wanted to send you in the United States if you agreed to go and you finished the exam. And I took the exam, I was a senior and had passing grade, and I was sent along with 10 other fellows to different parts of the world. But one in Washington, stopped in Washington, D.C., and there was two in Baltimore, and there was 10 of us in Perry Point, VA officer in Perry Point.
Had Perry Point just opened around there?
No, Perry Point had been open a long time before then. But I think it's some other name and something like that. But it was already a VA hospital. I came in 42. And so I left school and came to Perry Point on the 5th of December 1942. And I was supposed to graduate with my class in 43. But I had problems with my principal, so when I came back to graduate, he wouldn't allow me to graduate in class. I had my cap, gown, ring,
everything,
so he wouldn't let me graduate with the class. So I came back to Perry Point and worked the rest of that summer and up until time for school to open in September. Well, I didn't go back to school until I knew I had the first 6 weeks or first half semester passed. But in going back, they had changed most of the books in the school. You know, when the war broke out, they changed from arithmetic to basic mathematics and physical science and all this stuff. They didn't use that when I, so it kind of threw me behind because I went back to school 6 weeks late first semester. And it was hard, but I was determined to finish. Because after coming to Perry Point, I realized that I was, well, on the stupid side. I was just lazy, and in my home, it was nothing for a black youngster to do, a man to do, but work in the coal mine, unless he had a college education. And then it was either a preacher, teacher, or a nurse, maybe a doctor. And that was about all was open to people back in 42 and before that time, back in 30.
So, was your dad a coal miner?
Well, he was. My dad got killed in a coal mine the day I was 4 months old.
Oh, dear.
So my grandparents raised my sister and I. My mother was the oldest in the family of 12. And she had to go to work to help raise us. So she left Powelton and went to Charleston, West Virginia, to work. And she worked in the homes and all like that until I was grown, I mean, until I left home. And, but anyway, after my father got killed, well, they said she didn't have anyone to take care of, you know. So I was raised, well, as I say, only 4 months old, and I nursed my grandmother and thought she was my mother until I was, well, I guess 10, 11 years old before I found out she really wasn't my mother. She was my grandmother. And so anyway, I called her mom, just like the other part of the family. And I used her name. I used the name of Irby until I was through grade school. And I changed my real name when I went to high school. They wouldn't allow you to use the nicknames and little names that we used back in grade school, see, because just had a little one-room school, you know how it was. But after coming here and going back to finish school, I finished in 43, 44. So I lost 2 years out of school. I worked at Perry Point 11 months before I went back to school. And then it really opened my eyes to really try and learn something. And I was determined to try and be something, make something of myself. that I studied from, I had a brother, I called him a brother, at least he was my uncle.
Mm-hmm.
He was younger than I. And we had a couple classes in the same, a couple rooms, classes we had. He was in the 11th and I think I was in the 12th. So we took two classes together. And he was a very smart person. And he would go in school, the class would end, he would open the book 5 or 10 minutes, he had an aid. I would go in, I'd have to work for, or study from maybe 9 o'clock to 12 o'clock trying to make sure and have it so I could pass. And it worked out, I really enjoyed it. And so when I came back to Prairie Point, I didn't even have to take another examination. I, from working over there, they liked my work and knew me, so I just came in and went right back to work the next day after I finished school in, mm-hmm. in May. Came out of school in May at my home at that time.
Mm-hmm.
They had 11 years school here, but my home was 12 mm-hmm. at that time. So anyway, so I went back to Prairie Point and worked. And I stayed there for 3 years before I got married to my wife. I met her over there.
Did you live on Prairie Point?
Yeah, I lived in the men's quarters mm-hmm. at Prairie Point for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, and 1946 is when I met her in 45, mm-hmm. 44, 45 anyway. We got married in 46, April of 46. And then we moved to Hadley, with a lady named, a man named Roland Bennett on Erie Street in Hadley. We stayed there 11 months and I always wanted a home. I'd always wanted a home even before I was older, no home.
Mm-hmm.
So I lived with her and rented with her for 11 months. And then my wife's grandmother passed and lived here on Gravel Hill Road. So my aunts had room then, so we moved out with them
mm-hmm.
and to help them along. And they helped us, we helped them. And really enjoyed it for the last of 47. We start building the home, my home right over there. You can't see it. Bring up that tree. Look out the window. But anyway,
I can see part of it. I can see a window.
So we, my father-in-law and I, we got there. We built a home, and we moved in 48, and in 49, daughter was born. My first child was born. We've been married 3 years when she was born, and. She was born right in that house. See, at that time, most of the children were born at mm-hmm. home, if they were. And we both worked at Prairie Point, and we both wanted something, to have something, and we worked together. And she worked in the afternoon from 2, I think, till 12, and I worked from in the morning, 7 to 3.
Mm-hmm.
So this way, we just passed with each other. And I took care of the children in the evening all until my mother came from New York down to stay with us. She stayed with us a couple of years while mm-hmm. the first child was born. But when the second one was born, she went back to West Virginia. And we made out with Aunt taking care of the children until I could get home and all like this on Josephine Hilton. And made out real well with them. And I took interest in, well, right after I got married, in the church over here, because I was raised in a church family, a religious family.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother and grandparents, you had to go to Sunday school Sunday morning. You had church that 11 o'clock service, and then you used that 1 o'clock service. And if it was something at night, you were right there. Well, in fact, it wasn't anything hard for people to do, for blacks to do at that time. And you didn't have any recreation of any kind, just right in your little coal field, little community there.
Mm-hmm.
So, we didn't mind going to church, school, and things like that. We enjoyed it. And so when I came here, my grandmother told me when I left, be sure and stick to go to church. So I'd always mind her. So I enjoyed church. I joined the church right over here. I think I joined that in 1947. And I've been in ever since. And
how old is this church?
This church was 18, just a little bit old. 1864. I think it really, it was in as a circuit with someone else, I think, until this time they built this church.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had a what's called a sister church with Havoc Grace Green Street.
Mm-hmm.
St. James Havoc Grace Green Street, it was sister church. But anyway, when I started over here, just had a little coal stove, and I started right in helping to build the farm on Sunday with Mr. Lord Presbury. He just passed and gone a long time ago. He was a pretty old man when I came around here. But he was really a very religious man, and he thought a lot of his church. And I just took after him and enjoyed working with him, cutting mm-hmm. grass and everything mm-hmm. else. And then when he passed, I got too old, I just took it over, and I've been doing that almost ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And still cut the grass. But I made fires and coal stoves, and when we come to a horror stove, I'd go and light that on Sunday mornings for Sunday school, such as president, I mean, the superintendent of Sunday school for a while. I taught Sunday school. And then when we moved up to a oil furnace, well, I took care of that. In fact, I've just worked in the church ever since, and mm-hmm. still doing the same thing. And
do you know how this got started as a black community over here?
This community?
Mm-hmm.
No, I really don't know more than just a few families living here. And really, I couldn't say just how it
mm-hmm.
started, unless maybe some of it in here.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I know it is. Some of the history's in here.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to take this off of this anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, all
mm-hmm.
right, I understand, because I don't want to be talking in between.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that information is in here, because I remember reading it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing these Civil War fellas coming back, and after retiring from service, they came back to help at St. James and Gravel Hill, and
mm-hmm.
you know that.
Mm-hmm.
But my wife and her grandmother and grandfather, they were instrumental. They had something to do with it, but it was someone else who really gave the property,
mm-hmm.
all of that in this form here,
mm-hmm.
and donated the ground for the church and build and expand. And since then, well, they also stayed here where we remodeled. Back in 70, I think it was 71, that's when we couldn't borrow money from any of the banks around here. We tried Habit of Grace, Aberdeen, Bel Air, Elkton. We just tried all over the place to get money to add on to the little church we had to put a hall on it. Because the little school house that they had behind the church, we used it as a hall for cooking our lunches and things
mm-hmm.
like that. Such a little small one-room school that my wife and all graduated from. See, they had a one-room school back there
mm-hmm.
too, where they went to school until they even go to Havoc Grace for high school. And we had to, since no one would lend us the money, we put up this home mirror as collateral in order to add that hall on. And then the church paid me back.
Mm-hmm. This is 1970.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm here,
1970,
yeah.
71, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was told by Mr. Fulman, I think this is the name, that I think he's the president of the bank in Havoc Grace at the time, where I belong. And well, he and I didn't get along too well, but so he said I shouldn't do it, and he called me a fool and all this
mm-hmm.
stuff. I said, well, I'll just be a fool. I'm going to put my house up. You won't lend me the money. So we won't get a hall, and that's just what we did.
Mm-hmm.
And the church was able to pay me back.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started, when Reverend Tan came in 1982 or 1984, somewhere like that, we decided we want to add on to the church again. And so we got together, and a few of the members, we started off by donating $1,000. I think it was six of us that donated $1,000. I think it was Harry Bond, Lucy Bond, my wife, Geraldine Haig, Ronald Bishop. I think it's five. There was six of us anyway to donate $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
So we got started because most of the members was against it. They didn't need it. We need this. We need
this.
So we worked, and once we finally got the foundation and got the building coming up and began to look like something, then they they fell in line and started trying to help some.
Mm-hmm.
Some only helped when we were just about through. Some didn't come around until we were actually putting the finishing touch on the mm-hmm. church. Then they came in to say, look what we done. we did. So, anyway.
How many people belong to the church now, do you know?
It's on our roll, it's 79.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a little better than 100.
Mm-hmm.
But they said we'd sort of keep it at the 79 because if you put 100 down, if you drop down, you still pay that for mm-hmm. each person, you know, mm-hmm. in conference and all. So mm-hmm. you just leave it there. So if you go up or down.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we have a very good group out here. We work well together, get along. And our pastor, Reverend Tan, she's a jewel, I tell you.
Mm-hmm.
She's something, I tell you, she's loved by everybody,
mm-hmm.
not only here at our church, but all around. She's a very, very good speaker. She's really smart. And she really helped us out, and I think everybody worked hard to.
Mm-hmm.
And she said she wanted to try to pay the mortgage off. In fact, for the mortgage for this, we end up, we got a certain place, then the bank came in and loaned us, we bought $50,000,
mm-hmm.
and that's a lot for just a few members.
Oh, sure.
We had less than 20 members doing
wow.
it at one time, you know,
mm-hmm.
until we started moving up, and then we came in.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're doing pretty good. It's still a struggle. We still owe quite a bit,
mm-hmm.
I think a little under $30,000 now.
Mm-hmm.
But we're trying to make arrangements to get ready to try to pay some of that off,
mm-hmm.
get that out of the way. And we still have a problem with our water over the church, just as from the rubble field, we all are having problems here. I'm sure you heard of that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right now we're getting ready to, this week, start trying to abort the property down here that was the old parsonage at one time.
Oh.
And they sold it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was sold to my aunt, Stella, my wife's aunt,
mm-hmm.
Stella Jones. And then she sold it to my nephew. And then I got it from him just last year.
Mm-hmm.
And turned it back over to the church.
Is there no parsonage now?
No parsonage, no. The building was there, burned down, and then we had a trailer. And it caught fire a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
After it burned down, well, he just gave up on it and was going to lose the property mm-hmm. as tax. The tax. And I had a lien on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a chance to buy the property. Someone else had already bid it. $11,000 for it. But then when they couldn't get a clear title until mm-hmm. they came through me, and I didn't know it until this happened.
Well,
when the
mm-hmm.
sheriff came to my door telling me that I was to appear for, that I owed money on a lien on some property over here. And I looked at him, I said, how old? And he told me the number and all this. I said, wait a minute, I know what you're talking about. I said, no, I don't owe it. And I said, I have a lien on the property. He said, well, I knew it was something like it. Your name's involved anyway. I said, well, okay. So I appeared. And I let him know that I wanted the property. I wanted
mm-hmm.
to let it go to someone mm-hmm. else, see. Because we think, not for sure, but we think it was plotted in order to get it, to turn it over to the rubber field people, see. And so I stepped in and I did
mm-hmm.
stop there.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't have a way out of there. But if they'd have got this piece of property, they would have come
mm-hmm.
out on that side, see.
Mm-hmm.
So I got that, and my intention is I'm to turn it over to the church.
Mm-hmm.
For not free.
Mm-hmm.
Not just, and it's not, well, I paid for it too, but I borrowed money to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Paying it all, but I'm still giving it to the church. And so now, since we know it's water right over there, we're getting ready to trench, you know, trencher.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we'll get together and trench. It's water there, it never runs dry down in there. It's a two spring. So we're going to curb it up and everything and run pump and everything
mm-hmm.
and run the water to the church so we'll have plenty of water.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll use that water maybe just for the bathroom,
mm-hmm.
the side of the church, and the other well could take care of the hall,
mm-hmm.
the kitchen food part.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're planning on doing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're to do that this Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. In this heat.
Well, that's true. That's true. But, you know, even if we don't do it, we were planning on doing it in the morning anyway,
mm-hmm.
to say. So
mm-hmm.
we'll get it done. And I've always wanted to get that water in, so I promised them just last month that I was going to put it in.
Mm-hmm.
And They keep saying, do I have the money and all this? I'll pay for it. I'm going to pay for it myself.
Mm-hmm.
So there won't be any problems, and we don't have to have a lot of arguing about it.
Mm-hmm.
If we do it that way.
Do you have enough young people in the church to keep it going?
Well, that's it. It's young people in there. We have quite a few youngsters, but they're too young. Most of them are too young. And the ones who just got married and all, you know, they have families. It's kind of hard for them. And you can't get them to see that the more they give, the more they'll have.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't get them to see that yet.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it takes a long time. I remember when I was coming along with Reverend Bond and his wife, and my wife complained about giving so much because every time we needed something, we would most likely pay it, see. And if we come up with a need, you know, we'd just take it out of our pocket, we wouldn't pay it, we wouldn't get it. And at that time, I remember when he was here, sometime we'd get $9 or $10 to pay the pastor a week.
Mm-hmm.
I tell him, and now, $9 or $10, you can't do nothing with it. But anyway, Reverend Bond told my wife not to, don't let me ever hear you complain about giving. Again, it's as good as the Lord has been to you. And she said, then what to talk about and explain to
mm-hmm.
her. She said, look what the Lord has done, what he gave me and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And she remembered that. And she'd been working in the church faithfully, as hard or harder than anyone in that church
mm-hmm.
right now. She just, our room and all, just packed the papers every
mm-hmm.
time, turn around trying to move around, over the church. And they called here, they said, well, she's over the church. She's over there so many times by herself. And she's very faithful with her work over there. But so I remember that, and I remember once when I got to the place, I've been working at Prairie Point, started making pretty good money. Got to the place where I felt that I don't need the church anymore. I got a little home over there. I can sit back and take it easy. And it wasn't long before things started happening. I knew what it was all about. I went back to church and been there ever since, and I use it as an example, and I usually tell the different ones over there, if the Lord give it to you, you can take it away.
That's for sure.
That's right. So true, and I really believe in that.
Uh-huh.
And so then as far as the church and all, and we're coming on pretty good. We worked, just a few of us did most of the work, as I said, over there, and worked hard. My brother-in-law, he was the, he headed it up, Ronald Bishop.
Mm-hmm.
He's a home improvement man. He's a manual art teacher at a different school in Edgewood.
Mm-hmm.
He's in Java Town,
mm-hmm.
Bel Air, the different high schools. You know. He came out for a while, and he just went back last year, I think it was, back into the school system. And he took the plans and showed most of us what to do and all. But I mm-hmm. worked a little bit with myself, and I was able to help him some. And I helped him good people. I was stuck right with him.
Mm-hmm.
But he did most of it himself, and a beautiful job. I have to have seen the work.
Hmm.
Did anybody ever give you problems over here? Did they just leave you alone, leave the church alone?
Well, no, yeah, they gave us problems. They tried to put a, before the rubber field, Noble Hampton tried to put a gravel, wash gravel and sand over in that pit.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted for that. In fact, Noble, he bought it one time. Then we had problems about three different times. We'd go to court. We'd stop from Charles Hampton from putting a washer up here for washing his trash trucks and things up the top of the hill.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said, all these things finally fell through as, after a period of time. They went on and did what they wanted to do anyway. And it's a wonder they didn't get their washer or whatever, it didn't. So then, as you see, this group came through with the rubber field.
Mm-hmm.
And we were still fighting them. But happened we had some very good neighbors right to step in and help us. And I know if it hadn't have been for the Jonases and the Huxley, the rubber field would have been in.
Mm-hmm.
But they stuck right with us. They just ran all over the place and used their own money. And
mm-hmm.
to our son to come in from Texas
mm-hmm.
to help. He did this kind
mm-hmm.
of work and all, and he really helped us. And if it hadn't been for the communities around here, Webster and all those places, So what was will be, they would be using now.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has to help be named to the National Register.
Oh, yeah, this is true.
Yeah.
Well, this is it. Now, this Miss Hartfield, she and her group from the University of Maryland and from Howard University,
mm-hmm.
they came out, they were out here just last month, and we had a big day there to, what do we call it? Anyway, we started cleaning off the grave site back there. We'd been back there before and cut it out, but stopped mm-hmm. going back. So she brought a group of her law students up here, and they worked one Saturday, and we really did a beautiful job back in mm-hmm. there, cleaning it off and all again.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them didn't know anything about using hats and saws, but they were, some of them learned about that. First time they probably tried to do anything like that. Like,
got a few blitzes.
Coming from the city and all. So,
are they still burying people in that cemetery?
Well, no, but we're burying right around in here.
Closer to the church.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was saying with me getting the part that leads from the church on back down here, if they want to, they can probably make a grave out of that side.
Mm-hmm.
Out of there. It's not too wide out there, but it's still wide enough to put some grave. And then that property go down the hill and come all the way back here too.
Oh.
It's just a long, it's not too wide, but it comes in behind these three trailers right mm-hmm. over here. The property right back behind it's 2.5 acres.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be able to use it for something. If not a parsonage on it, then probably a grave site mm-hmm. or something, whatever they want to mm-hmm. use it for.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I'll say from working at Perry Point, I started out as an aide. Started out making $1,320 a year. That was government salary, $1,342, $1,320 a year. And it was a few years before we really started.
Were most of the aides black?
Huh?
Were most of the aides black?
No. At that time, we had 15 wards over there.
Mm-hmm. It was all men then?
No, they had one ward, one ladies' ward.
Did they?
Yeah, my wife worked on the ladies' ward.
Mm-hmm.
I did one ward, and at that time it was number 14, called 14. But on 7 and 8 were the two wards next to the mess hall. That was black.
Mm-hmm.
Those two wards were black, and all the others was white.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went there, no blacks could work on any of the white wards. And we had one fellow that is named Clarence Hopkins. In fact, he lives up in Hickory now. He's about the only, he's the only one around here now that came here when I mm-hmm. he was here. He was from my school too. And he's the only one around here now,
mm-hmm.
Clarence Hopkins. But he worked there so long, and then he went to Aberdeen, and he
mm-hmm.
worked his way up and retired down there.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he was light complexion. And he was able to work on one of the wards, and then he worked in the operating room and all.
Mm-hmm.
But none of the rest of us could work on the white wards. That's until they sent a fellow there by the name of Peter Pepper. And that's when the government made that change, I think in the 50-something, 57, I believe it was. And they would break up segregation
mm-hmm.
in their government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to get in the army and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And when he came in, he changed things around, and that's when we started moving around it more. But then I worked on a ward that was white, but it was just the elderly, wheelchairs and things like
mm-hmm.
that, most of them. And I don't know how, but that was the, I worked on the white ward myself. Another fellow named Alan Wynn, myself. In fact, we were the only two. We worked on the same ward,
mm-hmm.
but all the other aides, black aides, all worked on 7 and 8.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really a bad ward, too.
But they mostly were World War I veterans?
Oh, yeah, World War I, Civil War.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and then World War II started coming in, I guess in 40, about 45, 46, something like that. Started coming in. I think the first one was a lieutenant. He just came to my ward. Arthur D. Darmstetter. That was the name, Lieutenant. Mm-hmm. Well, no, captain. He was captain. That's what he was. He was mm-hmm. captain. Captain, that's what he was. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then they start really start coming after that.
Mm-hmm.
But then I worked, after working 15 years as an aide, I went to, I became a charge, in charge of a ward.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked on the receiving ward. That's where, when they'd all come in, and you didn't know what they were like when they would come in, mm-hmm. when the police would bring them in, maybe two carloads of police to bring one man in,
oh,
all
my.
That kind of stuff. And then they'd come into the mission room and
mm-hmm.
The help that I had was, it got to the point I was, I guess, getting ready to crack up myself because they was, they gave me the worst aides on any war that had an aide they couldn't get along with, they would send him over to my ward, see. And I'd work along with them, get along with them. I got, never had any problem actually with the aide no more than they want to injure the patients or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'd have to write a triplicate report to send in why this patient got a cut over his eye or something mm-hmm. like this, see. And I'd have to exaggerate. And it was just getting next to me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I came home and just told my wife, I said, I've got to come out of there. And she said, I told her, I tried to get another job in MAT.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, Mr. Bob, you're much, go ahead. So I put in for it. I put in for this job. And then when the nurse on the ward found out that I put in for this job, they held the papers. They wouldn't turn them in. So when the job thing came through, well, I was taking some patients to the MAT almost every day.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy I knew what to do up there. I'd had 4 years of woodwork and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And so this chief, he hadn't been there very long, and the other guys was telling him, so he told me to put in for it,
mm-hmm.
and he would make sure I got the job. And so when time came to the job, he said, he called me and asked me, well, why didn't I put in for the work? I said, I did. I told him, he said, well, he said, well, I didn't receive it. I didn't see it. So anyway, he checked it out and he found out that the nurse still had it on the desk. So they was notified mm-hmm. up at the office and they said, well, we can hold the job for you. So I said, no, let's don't do that because if it goes through and I don't pass, then I will see a hard time
mm-hmm.
from then on from the AIDS department.
Mm-hmm.
So I say that. So anyway, I forget the name of the man's name, man, it's been so long. But he told me, he said, next time a job come up that you want, you bring the papers to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I did. A job came open for a physical therapy assistant. And so I carried the papers to him, and then I went to the chief of PT, physical therapy, and then I went to the fellow in charge of Army and Rehabilitation Medical Service.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Mr. Marusak. And I explained to him and told him mm-hmm. what happened. He said, well, now, they tried to talk me out of it because they didn't have any blacks in any of those departments. One MAT had professional blacks mm-hmm. in, but no one else. So he told me that once I could get the job, I'd have to take a cut in salary and a cut in grade. So I told my wife, and she said, I said, I'm willing to take it because I said, I've got to get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. So she went up, they cut my salary and cut my grade, and I got the job. And I really enjoyed it. I tell you, I was just a different person after that.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked the work, and they liked my work.
Mm-hmm.
I worked up to the point where when they didn't have a registered physical therapist for 3 months at a time, I was in charge of physical therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And I could operate any piece of machinery mm-hmm. in the physical therapy.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And even to the chief of the hospital got to the place that when if they had to come over for the treatment they would ask for me. And it was the others mm-hmm. I had to name different ones that mm-hmm. do the same thing because I was interested in the work and I knew what I was doing
mm-hmm.
and enjoyed doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And got to the place I got different awards and all for
mm-hmm.
it, and I was staying in awards and things like that. And
is that what you were doing when you retired?
Yeah, mm-hmm. physical therapist assistant.
Mm-hmm.
That twice I ran the place for 3 months
mm-hmm.
whilst they were looking for a registered mm-hmm. therapist. One time, since they couldn't find registered therapists they had a fellow out of, recreational therapist.
Mm-hmm.
He was a recreational therapist, but he was professional, so he would come and use his name as, mm-hmm. you know, professional in the clinic in order to keep it running.
Mm-hmm.
But I was in charge.
You were doing
it. He didn't know what to do. He didn't know
funny.
Nothing about running like that.
That's funny.
And, but I got along fine after that. And I guess I would have worked a little longer, but I told him to start. I said, I'm going to work until I'm 55.
Mm-hmm.
And 30 years. So I had my 30 years and I was only 50, so I had to work an extra 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked 35 years before I could come out.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, you're not going any place, you just start making some decent money, because I'd been on GS3 and I'd gone up to GS6.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have been on GS10, or 6, 10 steps.
Mm-hmm.
But I came out at 9 steps on account of they took one from me.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed it, and I really quit. I would work a little longer, maybe about a year. Then they sent a fellow in from Virginia, a youngster right out of school, and he came in trying to tell me what to do. He wanted me to work here, and half a day with this building, and then after working over in the morning, we would come back and do his work in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
I had to show him the ropes to start with. I showed him the ropes and how to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And after he got the knack of everything, then he started wanting to run me all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So I just went up to the office and told him I was pretty, came home.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't go back. I still paid the line and came that day and came down home. And the only way I went back to the chief of R&S came out and asked me if I would come back to a party. That they
mm-hmm.
would give me a party, and they did.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave me a big party, and they gave me I was the first black as an aide to have a party in the recreation building.
Is that right?
And all the hospital was invited. I mean, there are doctors, nurses, everybody.
That's nice.
Mm-hmm. And well, I knew most of them because
mm-hmm.
I came in contact with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoyed that, and it was real nice. They tried to get me to come back after that. This fellow didn't last no time. He only lasted a little while because the doctor, I wouldn't tell him what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't tell him what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no. I wasn't that type of person.
Mm-hmm.
And they found out it wasn't all me. He had to leave. He had to get someone else. Mm-hmm.
Did you find as a black man, when you were a man when you came here, that there weren't just places you couldn't go that you wanted to go?
Oh yeah, we couldn't go any place. You wasn't allowed out in Prairieville. Well, it was always the second place to be.
Mm-hmm.
Buses and vans, you had a bus come in over on the point. That's about the only way you get out of there, unless you were known out in Prairieville.
Mm-hmm.
Or you were out there, you had to fight. You had to fight your way back, get off the train, we had to jump over the fence, come over the fence to get over and back in on the point.
Mm-hmm.
And they were always blacks getting beat up out there and everything. And they got a place in Newton, you know how to get around it.
Mm-hmm.
But I bought my first car for my birthday of 21 years old. And I was able to ride in that afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
But everything was segregated, even the bus. We'd ride in the back of the van chair's bus. And you had a little restroom over there, and you had just one little, you had to go to the window there to get your little food and all. And everything, even from traveling around here, when I got ready to go home, even after my children were born, we had to carry a cooler in the car with our food and drinks and things in, because there wasn't any place on the road that you could buy anything, not for blacks.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had nerve enough to stop at one place, you had to go around back to maybe get a sandwich or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I never did that because I always carried whatever I knew was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, my home in West Virginia, it wasn't bad. It was just different.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember, and I'm not saying just try to be smart or anything, but I remember when at Powelton, it was a coal mine. We had three coal mines, number 1, 2, and 3 mines, located in different places.
Mm-hmm.
And so they opened up a new section down in the bottom of Powelton, and all whites moved in these new houses and all. They called it New Powelton. And we had a little trouble with them when they first came. But they found out we didn't take any stuff, and we got a place, we got along just fine. We played ball and everything
mm-hmm.
together after that. But at first, we fought like everything after
mm-hmm.
a while. And, but we left there, we left Powelton. I came here, this thing was just so much different. I tell you, it was hard for a while for me.
Yeah.
Because I got along with, as I say, we played ball, football, and everything else mm-hmm. down the road together and communities. And it just wasn't rough like it was around here. But yeah, you can go anywhere, you know, like bathroom, you get white and black. Mm-hmm. And if you want, well, I guess you stayed away from those places yourself. I mean, if I had to go my way from home, and I usually would have to go back home or something like that. See. But it was something. And then to eat at Prairie Point, as I was saying, until 57, they had one little cubby hole for us to eat, the blacks to eat, and then the whites had another great big dining room to eat. Mm. And even the union. I was the president of the AFG, that's the government.
Mm-hmm.
I was the president of the black AFGE. And how we broke that up, I went to a meeting up in Pennsylvania and I started talking to the president of Lodge up in Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
and he asked me, well, what are you doing with two unions at Prairie Point? And I explained things to him, and he said, that can't be. So he told me what to do, and then he made a ring, came down, and Fred Dukes was the president. And when he came down, he told him that this wasn't legal, the government didn't stand for this. So that's when we broke it up, came together,
mm-hmm.
we merged. But it upset his tooth so much, even for the eating part, they even broke that up, see. We all started eating together, mm-hmm. and he refused to eat with us. He'd bring his lunch from home, and he lived right on the pool, on the mm-hmm. front there, too, see. He used to walk mm-hmm. down. And his brother, he had another brother, Clifton Duke, just much different day and night. Mm-hmm. He's a nice guy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But,
so Prairie Point was being integrated, but everything around it wasn't.
Oh,
is that right?
Everything. Mm-hmm. After 50, around 57.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Around 57.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, when you come out, it was all together. It was still, I mean, the ride, one that would come to work on the bus and mm-hmm. all, they still let the ride from the back of there and share the bus. And,
mm-hmm.
and as I say, I had my own car, so I didn't, it didn't really bother me.
Mm-hmm.
And, but to catch the train, my mother for a while lived in Philadelphia. While she came on the PF and mm-hmm. I came up this way. And, catch the bus, I mean, we'd catch the train, come over and climb over the water fence, you know, when you hold around it or climb on top of it and go up and get on the train to go to Philadelphia, which you can walk around to mm-hmm. Prairie.
Mm-hmm.
Prairie over there, every school place.
Wow.
Wow. But it changed, it got to be very nice and all that after the change.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think today's young black kids even have any idea of what that was like?
No. We kind of tell them at times, most times you don't, you just don't bring it up.
Yeah. Mm. Well, it's hard to believe.
Oh,
hard
yeah,
to
yeah.
believe, and it wasn't that long ago.
Oh, something. We had a fight over there, I think it was about, it must have been about 44. I think it was in 44. Mr. Campbell, Dr. Campbell, was the director of the hospital then. And we had one little end of the building 80 blacks,
mm-hmm.
and then we had a little room about as large as this whole house here,
mm-hmm.
a lobby where they had beds in for it. So then there was 30 some of us all together, and we had a few rooms. I think we had about 20 rooms,
mm-hmm.
and two in a room, and then the rest of them stayed out in the hall. In fact, I stayed out there when I first started until mm-hmm. I got somebody moved out and I moved in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to go around by side and make a telephone call. And one of the fellows went by around there one day, and anyway, he got in an argument or something with one of the guys. And but we all worked together.
Mm-hmm.
We worked in different wards and all, but still in the same, still the ones that wasn't segregated. And some way they got in an argument, we got an argument about it in the pool room. We had a little pool room down in the basement recreation hall. And we had learned to
that position, get in. We're back to the pool ball.
Yeah, I was saying, we had a recreation down in the basement, and then we had a movie on Wednesdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. That was recreation we had on the pool. And you had baseball, softball, and everything else. And we had teams to compete against each other, like there's a male, doctors, nurses, male nurses, and then we had they had Black AIDS had a team, White had a team, Prairieville, and then Prairie Point and mm-hmm. Village and all. We had 18, and we used to compete with most of the things.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we were just shooting pool those days, and these two fellows were from Kentucky, which was another red state, you remember. Name was Stylus and Dallas Hall. Stylus and Dallas Hall. So they didn't like it because they couldn't win. See, the winner would take the next person. You know, mm-hmm. we had two tables. And so every time they get in, we'd stay in no time before we get beat by one of the fellows, and they'd have to leave. So this boy named Alan Wynn, he was very sharp. He was short, though. So me and this Stylus got an argument down there. So anyway, we wouldn't let him fight because you're not going to fight him. You didn't have, you weren't allowed to have a knife to the government at that time.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't allowed to have a knife, nothing like that, in on the reservations.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the next morning, they got in a fight at the mess hall. On the way to the mess hall, they walked down to the mess hall. So they got in a fight. And we had a fellow named Reverend Shaw. And he told us that the fellows was planning to attack us. To be careful, he heard them talking, and that they were planning on, had got together and was planning on attacking us. So, of course, we go around in a group. So we did. We got ready to go to the mess hall. We all got together. So we met him. And we met him, one of the boys that worked with this one guy, Clarence Hopkins, was telling him a little flight.
Mm-hmm.
He walked along beside the Hopkins like he's talking to him, and then reached around and punched this boy, and next time that he wanted him. And that's when we started. And so we had actually a battle royal out there in the library in Prairie Point.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it must have been about 14 of us all together. We were battling. But as soon as we hit a few of them, they quit. And then the other two, one of them got cut. And one of our fellows got cut, and Ruben Berry got cut on the hand because he put his coat around his hand. This was with dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Had a knife. And he wrapped his coat around his hand and gave it to him. And he cut him on the finger. Anyway, he got in. And we throwed him down, he fractured his knee. And so we finally, guards and all of them got us separated. Now we told us we had to go to see the director, Mr. Campbell. And we got in there, he told us, he said, well, he didn't say in a nice way. He said a few names, and then he said, if you, this is what he just said, if you niggas, start any more trouble. This is on Friday evening. Before I get back here Monday morning, I'll fire all of you. That's just what he told us. Now, we didn't start it.
Mm-hmm.
They started everything.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what he told us. So we had to go come back to the quarters, and we left the station. Some of us went to Baltimore, and we just had a few stations because,
mm-hmm.
oh man, they ganged up, and they were just ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, one of the boys went around to make a call after this, see. And when he went around there, one of the boys said something smart to him. Instead of him saying anything back, he just went on and made his telephone call. And he said when he stepped back around this little corner, he said they were lined up there, sticks and everything else. And he said he didn't say nothing because he didn't argue with us. So he came on back out and he told us, and that's when we left the state. We left because we figured mm-hmm. there'd be trouble that night.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But after that, after we had the meeting with him and all and explained everything, we didn't have more trouble. We never had another fight either. They were the whole time over.
Mm-hmm.
I never had another.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I've talked to other people from Havre de Grace that said they really didn't remember there being any real trouble. I mean, blacks weren't allowed every place, mm-hmm. but they didn't remember there being violence or fights. Or
No, it wasn't. That's what I'm saying. There wasn't any other fights. In fact, these boys were just out of state.
Mm-hmm.
They were from Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just talked to me, these other guys, and he helped them. Most of them quit. They just wouldn't even fight when they helped
them. Mm-hmm.
After that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But no, we never had any trouble. It's been more than just I'm saying. You couldn't go through Prairieville though for the soldiers. We had Third Service Command over there. We had that was in 44, 45,
mm-hmm.
something like that. And those guys would get beat up if you were trying to come through Prairieville.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Prairieville was worse than even Havre de Grace or Aberdeen.
Prairieville and Pride and Sun.
Well, I've heard that they're still awful.
Oh yeah, those are two. Oh yeah. Oh, no, you never had any trouble in Aberdeen. You never had any trouble in Aberdeen. We had, because we had MPs and
mm-hmm.
SPs, because see, we had the shore patrol up
mm-hmm.
the Navy, too. They would all be around, like mm-hmm. a train station or like that. That was when we were able to get over and
mm-hmm.
catch our trains and all. There's always somebody there on duty.
Mm-hmm.
And once we got over the fence, but you just didn't come through Prairieville.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was something. But then in about 50, I guess it must have been, it was anyway after Dr. Pepper came in to break up the segregation, I had I organized a team of the young fellows from up on the point, on 4th Street and the point. And I was out of my former softball team, they grew. And we played the men and nursing and everybody. And we had the best little team going, I tell you. I remember quite a few of the white fellows, and Dr. Pepper's son was on the team too. And when, this is something that happened too about that time, he knew me because we had a good team. We had beat them grown men and everybody else. And them little young boys could play, though. Right now, I know Eddie Walker and Stymie, and all of them. I still remember quite a few of them on the team. But during that time that Dr. Pepper was there, that was in 49, that's when it was. It was 49. But that's when my child was born. I'd had a problem with one of the charge aides, fellas in charge of all the aides there. I'd worked in a 12-hour shift during the war, see, because actually the war that I worked on, it was only two men on the upstairs. We had 100 some patients, see. We had two girls. I worked upstairs. I mean, I was the only man upstairs. This other boy named Alan Wynn, he worked downstairs. I wanted to go to Bainbridge to see a boyfriend of mine that was in my school. Mm-hmm. To transfer to Bainbridge for the basics. And I called him and made arrangements to go up. And every time I get ready to go off, they would tell me I couldn't get off because they didn't have anyone to fill in for me. So there's a guy by the name Jimmy Seabrace. He was really nice. He was really white. He was real nice. And he told me, he said, Herman, he said, you're too nice for them to keep taking advantage of you. He said, every time you get ready to go someplace, they'll tell you if Gaddy come in or if this one come in or something like that on the afternoon shift, then you could go. And so he said, but then they know, but at this time, he said, now they told Gaddy last week that he could have off this day that you went off. He said, now he's telling you, you can go if you come in. He know he's not coming in, so he told me. So I said, okay. So I explained to the guy that was supervising me all the time what was happening. And I said, I made arrangements. I bought a fellow's car and everything to go to Bainbridge to see his boy. And I said, at 3 o'clock, my time comes to go off duty. I said, I'm going up there. So anyway, I stayed there until 3:05. I didn't want to say I was probably early, you know. So I had to change the shift. I went over and started taking my bath and everything. So it's Mr. Allen, Charlie, he came on. She come in. Come in, waving and cursing. Come in and said, my boy. He said, we always call him my boy. My boy. He said, I understand you said you didn't care what I said. You were going off anyway. And he said, let me tell you one damn thing. Oh, he got on the plate. I called him. I wrestled and boxed at school before came. I could take him. They knew that. I had to take him. Said, all them men.
Sure.
I could probably just do a girl. I've gotten a fight up there. I thought the guy was going to creep him, but I got the best of him. After that, I didn't have no trouble. So I called him, the guy that grabbed me. I told him, I said, look. I said, I don't curse you. Don't you curse me. Mm-hmm. I didn't curse. I wasn't allowed to curse. You know how that. So anyway, he grabbed me. He said, well, look at you. You can't just be doing what you want to do, man. I said, I'm not doing it. I'm going to explain just what happened on, you know. I said, well, now let me tell you. I said, every time one of the fellows had to go home for some emergency, they had to lend the money to go home. I said, let me tell you one thing. I said, you can have your, he said, if you can't have this 12-hour job, I said, I'll give it to someone else. I said, you can have your, the 8-hour. He said, you can't have the overtime or the, I'll give it to somebody else. I said, well, you can have your overtime and your 8 hours too. I said, you don't have to lend me money to go home. I said, well, I quit. And so he said, wait a minute, what went for? See, they had no men, wasn't no men around here at that time doing the war. See?
Sure.
So he said, wait a minute, because I got a job being to do. So he said, you you go here then. You go here today and come on back and work tomorrow. I said, okay. So I went home that morning and came back.
Mm-hmm.
So he waited until 49 to get back at me, because I was in college, you see. And 49, when my wife and a girl named Algard, they both had children in 49 together, just mm-hmm. a few weeks apart. And my wife and this other girl worked together.
Mm-hmm.
They both were good. My wife, well liked by everybody. And so when Algar came back, my wife came back, I think, a week later or something.
Mm-hmm.
And she came back with a job, and they told her she didn't have a job. So I said, man, I know what this is all about. So I said, now, I'm going to have to go see Dr. Pepper about this. But she came home crying. Algar came back, she couldn't get back home. So I said, okay. So I went over to Prairie Point. I was in the title stand.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved in when my first child was born. And my cousin lived at Prairie Point on 4th Street. And they had a 37 Chevrolet. I just bought a brand new 49 Ford.
Mm-hmm.
The director had a 47 Kaiser. I said, now I can't drive up to his place. I mean, I was young, but I had a lot. I was uh-huh. very common sense. And I can't drive up there with this thing. So I borrowed Paul Spencer's car, drove down there,
mm-hmm.
and a girl that I knew, a black girl, worked for the mansion, for the doctor there.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the back door, and well, I knew that too. So I went to the back door and knocked. She came out to her room. She said, well, I'm going to tell the doctor. I'll tell you this. So she went and told him, well, the doctor knew me through his son, see,
mm-hmm.
and watched his play. He'd come watch all the ball games.
Mm-hmm.
So, he said, come on in here. Come on in. So I come in. And he said, what's your problem? So I started telling him. I told him about this other girl, my
mm-hmm.
wife. And I said, they took Alvar back. My wife came back. And I said, they told me she didn't have a job. And I said, I don't want to know why.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. He said, well, how does your wife get along? I said, she get along fine. Everybody like her and all. And you ask him, it's embarrassing mm-hmm. everybody. And I told him what had happened. And I told him what I thought of him.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, I tell you what you do. Say, you come to me Monday morning, you come in, and I'll have it straightened out by then.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what's what. So when I was in midnight shift then, I got off and I came over and I got in the parking lot. Mr. Allen, come in and hey, my boy, wait a minute. I said, yes. He said, you don't have to go up to see her. You don't have to go up to see the director. You don't have to go up and say, will you see your wife? I swear, that's just what he said. I felt like telling him, who do you think I sleep with? That's what I thought. I was so angry. I said, but she went off. He said, tell her, come on back to work. Well, when he said it, I said, well, I'll forget what I was going to say. I said, yeah, I'll see him. He said, well, you tell her, come on in tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay. So I came on back and I told him about that thing. But I talked about that thing a long time. I said, will you see your wife?
We're pissing that up. You should have.
But anyway, after that, I never had any problems about anyone over there. And really, until this new chief of the team, young boy came.
Mm-hmm. And that's probably just because he was young.
He was young. Didn't know. But see, he wanted, every time he turned around, he wanted to go to a seminar or go to a meeting someplace, and I had to do his work, see, mm-hmm. while he was gone. He had to go to a meeting here or mm-hmm. something like that, go meet with somebody,
mm-hmm.
and I had to take over and do his work, and I got tired of that.
Sure.
I told him, I said, now look, I'm going to work one place or the other. You want me to work on 24, I'll work on 24. If you want to work on 23, I'll work there, or I'll mm-hmm. work in the clinic. I said, but I'm not going to do your work for somebody
mm-hmm.
else, too. And so... He got smart. See, I don't know what he said anyway. So I just walked him out and walked him up to the office and turned my papers in. You know, might be.
Sometimes that's what it takes,
yeah.
isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. I said it was just a good chance to get me out of there with the 35 years of 55, but I probably would have worked for a year or so more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You ever regret leaving West Virginia?
No. I went back every year, sometimes a couple of times a year, and then after retirement, I would run sometimes almost every month.
Mm-hmm.
Run down there. I was down there just last month, my uncle died.
Mm-hmm.
My wife died. Mm-hmm. No, I never regret.
Mm-hmm. No. Probably wouldn't have done as well, would you?
No, wasn't anything around that for me to do. Wasn't anything around for anybody to do at that time.
Mm-hmm.
It was a long time before things opened up to where. We had a a black family. He was a teacher, principal of elementary school named Vaughn. And he was, he had trucks. He hauled garbage.
Mm-hmm.
He had garbage and coal for the different kind of communities. See, because this is a coal field, mm-hmm. they're owned by companies.
Mm-hmm.
And so he would just go down and load up and carry mm-hmm. people in order. He'd go and deliver mm-hmm. that and all that. And other than that, it wasn't hardly anything else anybody was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you work on a garbage truck or on coal,
mm-hmm.
unless you worked in coal mines. So that was one reason I was back in school and all, because I wasn't interested in getting an education when I wasn't anything to do but go
right.
work in a coal mine.
Right.
But then when I was old enough to go in, the other brother, at least, he and I was only 6 weeks difference in our age. That's when I was telling you, I nursed
mm-hmm.
my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Only 6 weeks. We were raised as twins, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he just lived right down the road here now. Early. We were raised as twins. They dressed us as twins. They
mm-hmm.
named it. We were, I said, 11 or 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I found out my name was Hague instead of Irby.
Mm-hmm.
But I went by Honey Irby. You never knew me. And all the grown ups and everybody ran across with Honey Irby. That's all you got.
That's
Irby.
Cute.
Mm-hmm. Yes. No, I never regret leaving. But, Paul Jr. was in what's called a scout troop in Havity Grace. And I was talking to him and trying to get some information from him about scouts, and I found out he didn't know anything about scouting. But they were going to the Masonic Hall, was where we met, on Girard Street in Havity Grace, which is
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
But the sponsor institution was St. James Amy Church and the Reverend Thomas,
mm-hmm.
the sponsor institution, but their meeting place was the Masonic Hall, their meeting place at the time. But they said they'd had the troop for a little, pretty little while, and he asked me to come over to one of the meetings. So I went over to this meeting and sit in on the meeting, and I just listened to them the first time. And all they had to do was some fun and games and religious song quartets and all that
uh-huh.
stuff. Nothing about scouting whatsoever. So I don't think so. I came back. And so then I carried my books and let him see my scout books and things. I don't think they even had books. They're true.
Hmm.
And I had my books and things with
mm-hmm.
me. And I started telling him some of the things, and he just got so interested in it that he asked me if I would come back to the meeting again. And maybe I said, well, if I go back, I said, no, well, the second time I went back, I asked the scoutmaster, whose name was Horace Crom. Hathaway, Snake Hathaway, it's called
mm-hmm.
Snake Hathaway. He worked in the operating room and had a race for a long time. And he was just letting him play and all, wasn't teaching him nothing about scouting. So I asked him, I said, how about let's use some scout songs, you know, let's sing a scout song.
Mm-hmm.
So it was okay. So I taught him a little scout song right quick, you know, a little quick thing. He kind of liked that. And then I started showing him about a few knots and things
mm-hmm.
like that, quickie good time and all that, and
mm-hmm.
make a game out of it, you
mm-hmm.
know. Oh, and they just fell in love with that. So about the third or fourth time, they got to the place, they were so interested that the place was just crowded with the Boy Scouts, you know. And I taught them songs and compass, how to use
mm-hmm.
it as a game, knots and things like
mm-hmm.
this. They weren't used to nothing like that, see.
Mm-hmm.
So then the scoutmaster kind of got angry
uh-huh.
because the boys was all, you know, I was taking his job, but
mm-hmm.
I didn't want to take his job
mm-hmm.
like it. And I never forget, Lord knew I'm not lying. he got angry and wanted to fight.
Oh,
in front of the boys. In front of the boys.
Oh, my.
So I said, now, I don't think you can have me, but I said, you say that, well, no, you know. So after the boys left, I approached him.
Mm-hmm.
I said, now look, I said, I wouldn't argue in front of boys.
Mm-hmm.
I said, just they wouldn't think much of neither one of us fighting in front
mm-hmm.
of them, you know. I said, but now, if you think you can handle me, I said, let's go outside now. And no, he went back down and then all I said, because I don't think you can handle me. And he never came back to another meeting.
That right.
Never came back to another meeting. So that's when I took over. I started working with him and all. And then I put it in, and I even got a certificate from a scout master and all that kind of stuff like that.
Is the troop still there?
Huh?
Is that troop still around?
No, not now. It was Troop 261. We worked for a long time, and I got to play after working with them so long. I started, as a neighborhood commissioner, I started working with the field scout executive and organized troops. I organized troops in Aberdeen, Edgewood,
mm-hmm.
Bel Air, Churchfield, Rocks, eight teams. Magnolia, and over on Route 7 now, place now. We had seven teams. So we had one in Darlington, and then we had one at Cedars, up at, near Cedars,
mm-hmm.
not that way. And so I started doing that kind of work after I worked so long, but I would always go back and help them. I'd make sure I'd see about every month, you know, I'd travel around them. And I would talk people into coming into scouting, and that's what promoted scouting. And like I say, I just practice form, but just like any place I go now, some guy said, I remember you growing up now.
Did your little church over here ever have a scout troop?
I'm trying to think. Seemed like we had a troop there for a little while, because I remember her brother setting the field on fire. No, I think it was. No, I brought a troop from Havre de Grace out here, and it was a sage field here, where his house and everything was at the time. And he wasn't a scout, he set plays the field on fire. And there's a father to come get him. But I really enjoyed it though myself. I liked it. So when I helped to build, after starting these troops here, we didn't have any place to go for blacks or scout troop. We went to a place called Scout Key. It's then off of Harford Road before you get into Baltimore. You go back a little hole where they had to swim in and all. I never would forget going there. I had to save two boys from drowning in the same week.
Oh my.
One came, I think one was on the, I think on Monday, and the other one came in on Wednesday. But it was something like a rock quarry or something. The water was so deep in one little place that you couldn't, if you let down there, you wouldn't go find the bottom.
Right.
And I had boys from Baltimore and from different troops, you know. Because most of them couldn't get off. I worked midnight shift. I transported them there and took care of them. And there was hardly no help. And they sent me a fellow by the name of Pender from Baltimore. Field scout executive, they found I didn't have enough help. I was cooking and trying to do everything for the boys there, you know, and with more than about three or four troops. So he said, when Pender got there, I never did, he said, okay, you go ahead, Sidney. You've been here working all this time, so you take a day off, you go down to the pond. And when I got in there, I wasn't there in no time for a fellow from up near Bel Air on the other side at one of those troops. He had let down in this one spot. It already warned him not to let in. They had a lifeguard there. But when this boy let in, he panicked. And I had to jump in, close and all, and get this boy, because I knew he was under there, to bring him out, save him. And then I think that was on a Monday. And then on a Wednesday, I went out there again, and another boy had to jump in and save him. His name was Wainwright, but he was from Baltimore. He was shooting from Baltimore. I never get that. And I saved him from drowning.
Dear.
And I said, I'm not going back.
I'm not going back down anymore.
I can go back anymore. But really, this lifeguard panicked.
Wow.
Yes, it did. The one supposed to be the lifeguard panicked. Huh. So
was Broad Creek here then?
No, Broad Creek, that's it. I helped to build Broad Creek.
Did you really?
Yes, I did. I helped to take all of some of that barbed wire fence down, and we cut trees out. Cut off to put those first stationary buildings. I helped do all that.
Well, you've been a busy man.
Yeah. I was on the staff. I was on the staff several summers for maybe 2 weeks at a time to help up there and all. Yeah, I helped to arrange that. And we had two boys to go to Fillmore, plus Mr. Bernard Christie. Well, I taught Mr. Bernard Christie and Mr. Hugh Bransford. I had Hugh Bransford's son plus Christie's son. They were two little Philmont. Mr. Christie was with them. But I had to talk them hard to get them interested in the Boy Scouting. And with Mr. Bransford, he was a cook over at Prairie Point. And his son, very good guy, not go to the house and try to talk to him all, but he just wasn't interested. So he decided to come up to the camp one and to cook for us.
Mm-hmm.
And from that day on, he would take his time, 2 weeks off every summer and cook for us. And I mean, he and Bernard, Bernard Christie, they both could cook. And the staff would always want to come over and eat with us. You know, we had food. We didn't have no baked beans and hot dogs. I mean, we had regular food. And they'd eat greens and vegetables and stuff like that. My wife did. Now, my wife used to drive. She would drive. She would use part of her summer taking the troop.
Mm-hmm.
See, I couldn't get anyone to help transport them. But I had a truck plus a van. She would drive a car. We would take the children to different places, to down to Skyward Key on Hartford Road, up at Tittle's Farm. There's another place that we used. We used to have a jamboree up there. Because as I said, we didn't have a place to go. It was blacks.
Mm-hmm.
And we would have a good time, though. And the families would turn out. They were just interested. Well, actually, there wasn't no place to go, and they enjoyed it, too.
Mm-hmm.
And we had big, good times.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you still see any of your scouts?
Oh, yeah.
I still see some.
Okay. I got a picture. We had a fair. Now, these are the boys now. Just last. Was this last year, Gerald, or year before last?
Oh, isn't that fun?
This was up at Poor Jimmy's.
Uh-huh.
Poor Jimmy's. They gave my wife and I a surprise party.
Isn't that nice?
Recognition dinner, that's what it was.
Uh-huh.
And these boys came from all around. Now, this
you could probably tell stories about all of them.
Yeah, now this one here died after this.
Uh-huh.
He just died. He was from New Jersey, and he wanted to come to this fair so bad he wouldn't let them know that he was sick.
Uh-huh.
And he came on, and then just...
Isn't that nice?
It wasn't about 2 or 3 months later he died.
Mm-hmm.
As Harry Brown. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you probably remember stories about every one of these as they were little kids.
Maybe not mine. I don't remember most of them.
That's the same man.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. It's the same one here.
Is he originally from Havre de Grace?
Yes, right down the street from the hospital there. Three brothers, all of them were very good scouts.
But it was nice that he could make it then.
Yeah. Well, let's just say the brothers told me at the funeral there that they said that he knew he was sick. He said, but he wasn't going to miss that. And he made it down there. And right after
That's nice.
Yes, sir. So they all had something to say. They all still remember. Now, we couldn't get this is one of the brothers. Now, this is the brother from Prairie Point. That's Charles.
Mm-hmm.
He was next to Paul. Now, Paul was the one that talked me into going. And he was a warrant officer in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
He retired from service in Oregon. He had a big TV place up in New Jersey now.
Uh-huh.
He didn't come. I don't know if like to do too much getting around. But he was the oldest boy. But he wanted to talk me into coming into scouting.
Wow.
It's
nice to see all your hard work turn into these nice men, isn't it?
Yeah, I was a charter member. Oh, it's a tag or something. Charter member for the Masonics up in the Rocks. I ran across those papers last night, too.
I don't know when you had time to sleep.
I wanted to often say that. How did I have time
to do all this?
Things? Yeah, because I worked at the church. I kept things going over there and around here. And I had, I had apartments. Yeah, I had apartments by then.
Uh-huh.
In 55. In 55, I had that building.
Well, you didn't have time to get in trouble.
I don't know. I don't know. I guess I didn't. Maybe I didn't. Now this is a registration form. I guess the first car I got from Mercury.
He saved all this. You're a saver,
I ran across last night. I was looking through papers and things and found
$15.
Look at that. Isn't that something? $15.
Do you remember how much you paid for your first car?
Wasn't much. Because second hand, so you couldn't buy a car in 40. You know, from 42 to 46. 46, you know, you couldn't buy a new car. Called the kind of war. That's the toll. Yeah. Here's my health record.
read all this together.
Yeah. Oh my, this is vaccinations from when you were a kid.
Yeah. No, growing up, no, I was pretty fluent.
Oh, okay. Okay. Oh yeah, 62.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know if they ever did any of those horrible tests over at Perry Point on any of the patients? You know, like we hear about, you know, where they were giving the black soldiers drugs and things. Do you know that they ever did anything like that? Sure. You know, like the airmen and, you know, when they were using them as guinea pigs?
No, I don't think they used any over there as guinea pigs. Probably some of these other larger hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
They might have.
I mean, now we're hearing all those horrible stories.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't really use that. But, they use them, just give them shock treatment. Now, we had one boy from Hatteras die from that, from shock treatment, but I don't know whether it probably scared him or scared him, mm-hmm. scared some of himself anyway. But,
but that's what they did then.
That was shock treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and, as I say, I played, semi-pro baseball. See,
now, when did you have time for that?
Well, my wife did. I don't know either. But I guess I stayed on the go all the time. But Havre de Grace, I played for Havre de Grace Cardinals. And we used to play the Ely Giants every year. Here, and we go down there and play, see. And we had one brother. See, that was the black league, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They were
mm-hmm.
professional. Ely Giants with Baltimore. And Ernie Burke pitched for Ely Giants. He played with us first, then he went down there.
Mm-hmm.
And then his brother, both of them pitched, and William Burke pitched for us, for mm-hmm. our team, in Havre de Grace. I played second base. And we played several professional teams. And then we used to go to Atlantic City and play, Philadelphia, Shire Park. And we played,
mm-hmm.
we used to travel and play. In fact, I did drive the bus. I drove school bus. I drove a charter bus. Now, that's what I'm saying. I guess he said so many things. I used to drive to Hershey Park. I had 6 and 7 trips a summer, charter bus,
mm-hmm.
to Hershey Park, to Lenape. Lenape was the only place blacks could go up until after segregation.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have any, they opened their place up to the blacks one day year. Am I right, Gerald? They opened Lenape up to the blacks once a year. And man, that place, people flocked all around to come for that one day up
mm-hmm.
to Lenape. And then we used to go to New Jersey. I'm trying to think of the name of that place. You go across the bridge over into New Jersey and you turn right. That would go like you're going to Camden
mm-hmm.
or something like that.
Salem, and, maybe?
No, I don't think it was Salem. I knew the name. I know the name
mm-hmm.
of the place right here called White Rock. I remember too.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go up there every year. Then I used to drive down to Carr's Beach. That's down in Annapolis.
Mm-hmm.
They had Carr's Beach and Spirits Beach. That was two different brothers, and all owned two different beaches
mm-hmm.
there. Now I used to make trips down there. See, different people would call for me to get the bus to drive. And by me working at night, see, I have all day to go to anything. I'd come back, I'd maybe sleep in the bus. I'd lay on the back seat of the bus and go to sleep during the day and come on back and bring them back and go to work.
Bye.
I worked three jobs at one time. I worked Perry Point 8 hours, and then I'd get off in the morning, and I was one of the few that had a car around here. I used to pick up the riders, and there'd be 6 of us to go to Aberdeen Proving Ground to work an 8-hour shift down there.
Oh, my.
Building construction. I only worked that for 1 year, though. And it did me in after that. But I didn't have that much to do down there, but I had the transportation.
Uh-huh.
The guys, the finishers, the cement and stuff like that, they didn't have any way to get back home in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
So if they were going to make overtime, they'd give me overtime too, because they would just tell me, well, you just stay in and so and so. You wet the burlap down or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do that kind of work. And I wouldn't dig holes and things like that because God said, you didn't even know how to dig a hole. couldn't dig straight, you know. So he gave me the truck to go out and meet the trucks to transport them in,
mm-hmm.
Guide them into the proving ground to the construction site.
Mm-hmm.
And I would help on the cement truck. I could have a shovel to guide the cement wherever I wanted to go, you know. I could do that. And then I had a truck to go and pick up the lunch for all the fellas.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go down to the commissary. I'd take everybody's order. And then I'd go down to the commissary and bring that lunch bag at lunchtime. See?
Mm-hmm.
I'd leave me about an hour or so ahead of time. I'd come back with everybody's lunch. No, he said, you're pretty good at that. That's your job. So I'd do that, and I'd take the trash to the dump,
uh-huh.
And that was a big thing. I came back in the evening, time to quit. I'd wait for them to leave. I'd go get in the car and go to sleep. Or I'd go over to the bathroom and go to sleep
uh-huh.
over there, see?
Uh-huh.
And he didn't care. He just as long as I was there, he carried me in back home.
Somebody told me one time that there were a couple boxing arenas in Havre de Grace. Do you remember them?
Mm-hmm.
Were they open to blacks?
Yeah, blacks box there, yeah.
Did
but
they?
This Spencer boy boxed there. This Charles,
mm-hmm.
The oldest one, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he boxed for a while too, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, going to him. That was a Gato. And I knew quite a few of them too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah. And
so is there anything you didn't do?
Well, let's see.
Now, somewhere in here said you started the bowling league, too.
Oh, yeah. See,
that was in your spare time.
Yeah. Well, that's at night. See, that was at night. But what happened, see, blacks couldn't bowl. See, we couldn't go in the ideal, lane then. See,
mm-hmm.
wasn't Harper Lane's ideal lane. And on my ward, my ward is number one, the same four, we had a male nurse there from New York named Mascara. Tony Mascara. He was a very good bowler. You may have heard him because he
mm-hmm.
bowled on the field,
mm-hmm.
professional. He and Shufold was a nurse, the male
mm-hmm.
nurse at Prairie Farm. See, I played with him all over and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then just died here this summer. Oh, she gave me good. Gee, Manetti, I can't call his little name. He's just. Well, his son still run the place down there. I bowled in and just quit bowling there. I called him a few minutes. Let's see, Mascara, Shufo, and Marshall. And Marshall just died just a few months ago, and his son took the place. But by me working with Tony, Tony asked me, he said, why don't you bowl? I said, well, blacks not allowed to bowl around here. He said, what? See, because he's right in New York, and he said, I never heard of such thing. So they said we got together and went to Bob Turret's place up in Bel Air. I think it's the place in Elkton first. We got together to talk to the fellow in Elkton.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, what you do? He said, if you go and check with Ideal Diner and Bob Turret, and if they'll let you bowl, it's okay with me. We'll go
mm-hmm.
along with it. He said, see if you can't talk them to let you bowl. We were bowling on a proving ground, in a basement of a building on a proving ground,
mm-hmm.
and we were bowling in Newark,
mm-hmm.
see. So somebody already knew how to bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we got together, Dr. Spry, Teacher Lisby, that's what George Griffin. There was several of us anyway. We got together and we went to him and asked him about it. And once one wasn't willing to go along with it was Ideal Diner. So he would, with them saying they would take us in,
mm-hmm.
and he wouldn't. Mascara, Shufold, and Marshall went together and bought him out.
Mm-hmm.
So he bought him out. And that's when we started bowling down there. It was in 63, 64. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when he changed my Ideal, because it was Ideal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we helped organize that too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it also says that you were the first basketball coach at Havre de Grace Colored High School.
That's right. I've turned to some of that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I came here, all they had was one pole with a ring around it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all out there trying to play ball on that with that one ring.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them knew anything about a position or nothing mm-hmm. like that when I came back to high school. So I was playing over at Prairie Point.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I formed a team, and we played different schools. We went down to Eastern Shore in different places,
mm-hmm.
Elkton, and Bel Air. Bel Air just built Central there. and they only had two big tars and some whole rack of prepared. But we would have a game with one professional guy named Horace Cromwell. He was a teacher, and then he was All-American. He was tall. And then when Al Robinson, Clarence Hopkins, boy, I was thinking about this, mm-hmm. I don't know. And named Harry Ballard. We formed a team, Harvey Smith. And we had a pretty good team. So we used to travel around and play the different schools, and then whatever they took up to mm-hmm. we didn't take nothing. Mm-hmm. We didn't take them, we just helped them, you know. Mm-hmm. And we went all down all the East Chua, different places, and playing. We used to have a good time. So Cromwell mentioned about maybe why we help try to help the school mm-hmm. team. I said, sure, I'll put them to help if they want to learn. So by me going over there.
Was that when the school was in downtown Havergrace or Oakington?
It wasn't Havergrace, it wasn't Havergrace. That was before the Consolidated, Havergrace Consolidated. Mm-hmm. It was right on Fifth mm-hmm. Street, mm-hmm. right Fifth, I think. Somewhere anyway.
Yeah.
So I started taking fellas, asking if we'd get them together, we'd take them over to Prairie Point.
Oh.
Take them over to Prairie Point, see, we had a league mm-hmm. over where we had the black, white, we had male nurses mm-hmm. and doctors. We had 18 league over at Prairieville mm-hmm. And Prairie Point. We had 18. So anyway, by us playing over there, and Horace Cromwell was on the staff where we made arrangements to carry the boys over there and let them practice. So we taught them to play over there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we finally moved from there out to Central Consolidated.
Mm-hmm.
I was driving the bus at that time, driving high school bus then. And I have to move all the classes out there, and the equipment and everything to the school. And we made us a Stansbury, Russell. Russell was a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a shop. So we made us hoops and things like that and started playing basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And we taught the boys to play there. And he didn't know how to play, nor did Morgan Jones. Neither one of them knew anything about basketball. So I would work with the boys, and when we would go to Baltimore, play like at Banneker and some other place like mm-hmm. that, I know once they would have them. Usually an official would be one of the students from Morgan State or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when we went to Banneker, they threatened to put me out of the building because I wasn't a teacher. And I was going to, if I said anything else to the boys, and I had time trying to coach the ball.
Yeah. They're
like, oh, but we had a team though. We working. We went to, I took the team in my second year. We went to play in a tournament at Morgan State.
Oh, my.
Yes, we did. Went down in that glass backboard, and children weren't used to that. In fact, I wasn't used to it either. And by the time they got used to it, we almost won the game, but we didn't. But they just throw them, see, they weren't used to that. Uh-huh. They had practice on that or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the boys were one, because I had some boys could really shoot, and they were good.
How long did you do that?
I did that until they got a coach,
mm-hmm.
Mr. Lilly came in as a teacher,
mm-hmm.
and he knew basketball. He took over as a coach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did it for a good couple of 2 years, I know, not three. Yeah, and that's how I started that team.
My.
And on a tennis court, I helped build a tennis court.
You're making me tired just listening to this.
right across from the school, it was a flat land there. It's a building on it now.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Reginald Jones, he liked tennis, Dr. Stansbury, and Professor Roy. Princeton.
Mm-hmm.
We all like Princeton. We played tennis. We made us a court out there and stopped playing there until we made one out after we went to Central.
Mm-hmm.
We got one out there. And we built one after, forget the fellow's name, he put a building on that property. So then we built us a court in Dr. Stansbury's backyard where he had his apartment there.
Mm-hmm.
So we built one there. We played there. Dr. Waxman and Dr. Stanley. I used to go out on the post and play different ones out there, Sergeant mm-hmm. Washington and all. I'm not bragging anymore. I was pretty good in any kind of sport. I was pretty good at anything, any kind of sport.
Mm-hmm.
From pool, I could run the balls in pool. I was pretty good in any kind of sport that I took part in. I felt that if somebody else could learn, I could do it too. That's just the way I felt about things.
Uh-huh.
And so we played that, and then I had a little league baseball, football, and softball team. You know, my son, he was in softball, had him in Westmoor. We went out to Lockjoint. I don't know what it was called, Lockjoint. It didn't seem like me to call it something else. But we had different fields that we played on. But I never forget, my son pitched a no-hitter when he was young. He pitched a no-hitter, shut out game. And, but anyway, I helped with that. Then George Scott, teacher and myself, we had a team that no one wanted in football, little league football in our degree. We had never forget some of the fellows there on that. But we worked that for about 2 years. We were from that. We had little league baseball, football, and basketball, yeah. Baseball, football, and basketball. Played all of those. And
the only other thing this thing says that you didn't talk about is you secured the first black housing units in Edgewood and Aberdeen.
I helped. We had what we call community action, a community action group. That was Dr. Williams, the president of that. This was community action of Harford County.
Mm-hmm.
Harford County, and we meet in Bel Air. But then we had I was president here on Gravel Hill, community action here on Gravel Hill. We built us a playground back out here, and I had it bulldozed off and all. I paid for that. A friend of mine had a bulldozer from way down near Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
He came out and fixed that for us, and we put us a pavilion behind it. And then we had then the county sent us an instructor and all, and some equipment. And we worked that. Anything that was to help, I tried to do it. As I said, community action and food. We made arrangements and helped select the people to start the one at Edgewood, the project at Edgewood.
Mm-hmm.
Then after Bill Devon, we worked on the one here in Aberdeen.
Mm-hmm.
And also the project out there on Oak Street and all like that, we met and all and arranged to help get that started for the blacks to get that section there.
Mm-hmm.
I was handling that also.
Is there anything you've wanted to do you haven't done?
I don't know. I was figuring, I want to be watering that church or watering that church, no. But I can't think of anything else other than that I want to do.
Well, it's not many people can say that. That's got to make you feel good.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and I worked in credit union with Perry Point. I worked as a loan officer for over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I got to the place that the people worried me so they would even call here at the house. They couldn't get a loan, and they were saying, well, they say I'm overextended and all that, and I can't get a loan. I don't know if I could do anything for them. I'd have to go and try and talk for them. I would talk them most likely. I'd talk them into giving them a loan. A lot of them I stood for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I would, I stood for some of the loans and all. I had so many going at one time that they made a ruling that officers couldn't co-sign. An officer couldn't co-sign for them. That sort of thing stopped. But at the time, I lost money too. That's what someone didn't pay at all. And then I belonged to the Black Ministry and Layman's Alliance. That's a group for all the Black Ministry and Layman's. In fact, it's more than just Harford County. Yeah, we started out just Harford County. Started out down at Bush Chapel, Havoc Grace. There's several churches there in Havoc Grace, you know. The Bush Chapel, Mr. Reverend Makel, Gerald? I don't know, but she must be back in there with the door closed. I can't call her name. His daughter was became a minister too. I knew it's not Mako. Mako's another. Anyway, I joined that under Reverend Thomas from Havoc Grace. He had the church here on Green Street.
Mm-hmm.
And formed it. And then after he went to Prairie Point and left that church, Reverend Sewell and that bunch, they got together so the ministers of a different church would get together and try to help each other and work together to help do things for the community and one for out here.
So I've been in that for a while, about the oldest, I guess I'm one of the oldest lay members now. Some of them, Reverend Williamson and Reverend Galloway are still in that.
Mm-hmm.
We all went in about the same time, but they are ministers now.
Mm-hmm.
They were lay at the time, ministers.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm the oldest layman.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still active, I'm still active from that. Yeah, and they said the Prairie Fort Credit Union, they gave me a certificate. It's framed and all. I don't know where my wife put that. That's here someplace. But I got quite a few awards that I'll probably let you see. If I work them up and
uh-huh.
give them to you if you want them. What did it say? My broad tree. I remember I wrote a note there about the fences and all, and I have to build it. Mm-hmm. And the Edgewood. Yeah.
I don't know when you found time to do all this.
I said the same thing. I can't. I don't know how I do. But just like I said, when I was working three jobs at a time, I was still doing some of this stuff. But 2 days a week that I had off Prairie Point, I used to go out to Peter J's horse farm. I used to work out there. I used to trim his ivory and stuff and scrape the gravel and in the lane uh-huh. and all that kind of stuff. I do that 2 days a week. I could work as many hours as I wanted, and I was mowing balls and everything like that. Grass cut, things like that. Yeah, I did that. So you had to work if you wanted something.
Well.
But out of that, I was going to say, I had four apartments and
uh-huh.
my own home here. And with my wife working, she was able to do all right.
Well, that's good.
Lord really blessed us. He blessed us.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
I think that's enough for any lifetime.